At Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care. And we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Asbrook, and this is On Point. It's graduation season, and the class of 2014 is heading into a rough job market. Better than in past years, but far from great. Many graduates have big debt to pay off, big dreams, and they should, but it's still tough out there. We'll look at who's getting hired, the jobs they're getting, where, starting pay, and more. This hour, On Point, jobs and the class of 2014. Later in this hour, we will hear football great Peyton Manning share some heartfelt advice for the University of Virginia graduating class of 2014. First, let's go right to what's going on now. A little sound of it here. North Carolina state class of 2014 grads talking with ABC Eyewitness News about a week ago about their plans after graduation.
I had an interview today with Chapel Hill Carrboro City Schools, and it's a follow-up interview, so I've had one so far.
I'm currently applying for nursing school now, and I'm working with Maxim Healthcare as a rehabilitation technician.
I'm going to work at Southern Weddings Magazine in Chapel Hill.
We're going to look right across this country in this hour. Joining me first from Washington is Heidi Shierholz, economist at the Economic Policy Institute. She publishes an annual report about young adults in the labor market. Her latest just came out May 1st. You can link to it at our website, onpointradio.org. Heidi, thanks for joining us. What's the big picture here for this graduating class?
You said it when you said things are better now for this class than they were for their older brothers and sisters that graduated last year, the year before last, the year before that, but they're still really, really hard. We're in a recovery. Job opportunities are increasing, but it's happening agonizingly slowly. So this class in 2014, this class of 2014, who are graduating with a college degree, these kids actually entered college. Most of them entered college when the Great Recession was officially over. There's no way they could have predicted that 4 years later they would be entering into a labor market that is still as weak as ours is today. But it's still a pretty difficult picture for young people, even those with college degrees.
Well, let's look at that. We're looking at all kinds of grads here, high school or two-year college, four-year college. The college degree has been trumpeted as the kind of ticket to success. What does it guarantee or not guarantee these days?
That's a good question. So you are better off. On average, people with a college degree, they face lower unemployment rates. They get higher wages, better benefits. So, you know, not everyone will have that experience, but on average, people with a college degree do better. But a college degree does not necessarily protect you. It's not total insurance. So what we've seen in this downturn is that the unemployment rate has jumped up even for those with a college degree. Underemployment has jumped up even for those with a college degree. One of the reasons that unemployment is lower for those with a college degree than it is for those without a college degree is because people with a college degree may be more likely to land a job that doesn't actually require their college degree. An employer might say, yeah, they got a college degree. I want them as my barista. So they may get that job over and above somebody with a high school degree, which is, it's great that they have a job, but that is certainly not what they were hoping for when they made the massive time and investment and money in getting that college degree.
Okay, never mind the diploma for a minute then. What about skills in this economy? We're told skills are the way to go.
Yeah, so it does. You are better off if you have a college degree, and if what major you have matters. So workers with young people coming out with in the STEM, the quote-unquote STEM field, science, technology, engineering, mathematics, they actually do better in finding first jobs that pay more. But like all college grads, they are also facing elevated unemployment. And I can put some numbers on this from a Fed study that came out earlier this year.
Yes.
25% of young people coming out with engineering degrees are either unemployed or are working in jobs that don't require a college degree at all. 35% of young people who are in math, who have math and computer majors, are either unemployed or working in jobs that don't require a college degree. So those are actually better numbers than what you see for, you know, say somebody with a liberal arts degree, which close to my heart, I had a liberal arts degree, but they are, it's still really bleak even for those in STEM fields. So what that, the bottom line is when the, when you enter the labor market in a situation like we are now, where job opportunities are really weak in a pretty broad way, you're better off if you have a college degree, if you have a college degree in a highly sought after field. But even those young people are worse off now than they would have been if they'd have, if they had had the good fortune to be born a few years earlier, that would have meant they weren't trying to find a job in the labor market as weak as it is today.
The numbers really were better. We don't want to forget that. This doesn't have to be the way things are. But you write in your report, the class of 2014 will be the sixth consecutive graduating class to enter the labor market during a period of profound weakness. That's a tough and long-lasting headwind, Heidi.
Yeah, this the not just the severity of this period of economic weakness, but its duration has just been incredible. This is just the deepest, longest period of economic weakness we've seen in three generations. And this cohort, young people who enter the labor market during this a period like this, they're going to feel it for a long time. So the research shows that people who, you know, just through no fault of their own, they happen to be born at a time that dumped them as new workers into a weak labor market, they will face long-lasting negative consequences. They will on average, start out at lower-level jobs than they otherwise would have gotten, for lower wages, worse benefits. They'll have more a period of earnings and employment instability. That those kind of bad outcomes, that's what will characterize the start of the career for many of these people, and it will last for a long time. It turns out that what path you get on when you first come out of school really has lasting consequences, and it's unlikely that people who enter this a labor market this week are going to recover for another 10 to 15 years. So it'll be, this cohort will likely face reduced earnings for at least 10 to 15 years. So even after the broader economy recovers, they'll still be set back because where you start matters.
Starting to look like we ought to be looking at this in a big way, not just student by student. And of course, we do in many conversations right here on this show. I want to think about where the jobs are. We can see that overall there are not enough. But Heidi Scherholz at the Economic Policy Institute, we thank you for getting us started. Thanks very much for joining us.
It's been my pleasure. Thank you.
Let me go to Bethlehem, Pennsylvania, and Edwin Koch. He's Director of Strategic and Foundation Research at the National Association of Colleges and Employers. Their members include college career counselors and employers. They do a big survey of job prospects of graduating college seniors each year. Edwin Koch, thanks very much for being with us.
Thanks, Tom.
Overall, how do you look at the job market for those just coming out of school?
Pretty much the way Heidi did, to be honest with you. It is, for the class of 2014, it is better than it was for the class of 2013, somewhat improved, but not, still a very difficult market. We do a massive survey of students every year, and the percentage that have jobs at graduation is up about a percentage higher than last year, from 29 to 30%.
So 30% are graduating with a job in hand.
Right. That's students who actually have applied for a job. 30% have a job in hand.
Okay.
A lot of students wait until after graduation before they actually enter the job market.
Edwin, how does that compare to, let's say, a good times number? Go back to when the economy was quite strong. What would that number be?
Well, the first year we did the survey was 2007, which was the last really good year.
Yeah.
And at that time, 52% had a job in hand who had applied for a job. Interestingly enough, when we look at the number of offers that students receive right now, since the recession, or since 2008, really, the median number of offers is actually zero. That means most students don't actually get an offer that have applied for a job. Back in 2007, the median number of offers was 2.5 per applicant.
These are big differences, half or 30%, 2.5 versus zero. And what about the pay that they're being offered if they do have a job offer? What's that look like this year?
The pay is pretty stable. Right now, we're looking at about a 1.2% increase over last year. That's on average, taking and a national average is kind of a broad number here. We're looking at about $45,000 per per student.
For new grads, if they have a job offer, but of course that's tricky in itself. In the top field or two at this graduation time, Edwin?
The top fields are what they traditionally have been: accounting, finance, computer science, economics. Those are the top fields that right now. The interesting thing about this year's class compared to last year, the improvement hasn't been in those areas. The improvement has actually been more in the liberal arts areas.
Edwin Koch, hold that thought. We'll take a short break, come back, and learn more. We're so glad you're with us. From the National Association of Colleges and Employers, I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about jobs and the class of 2014, new college grads, new high school grads, looking at what is out there for work, for jobs. Here's a little sound last week from Georgetown University's class of 2014. ABC News reporter Kendis Gibson talking with students there.
Do you have a job?
No, I'm going to law school.
Okay, you?
I do have a job.
You?
No.
Going to law school?
No.
And as for the students going to law school?
I'm doing law school because I want to wait out the economy.
Waiting it out. Are some snagging jobs? Yes, they are. University of Colorado graduating senior Madison Piercy was interviewed by USA Today about her job prospects. Double major, electrical engineering, computer science.
I mean, I literally just showed up to a career fair in between classes for, like, maybe 10, 15 minutes. And that was, like, my extent of actually trying.
And she's hired. Research lab, MIT. Edwin Koch is with us from Bethlehem, Pennsylvania, director of strategic and foundation research at the National Association of Colleges and Employers. He's been walking us through some of the numbers in the hot fields. Top of the list, he says, again, accounting, finance, computer sciences, economics. But you say the improvement is elsewhere and even in liberal arts. What's going on there, Edwin?
Well, it's the education market. The education market has been really down since the recession. It's been abysmal, to be really honest with you. This year, we see a huge improvement in that marketplace.
Does that mean teachers, Ed?
Yes, that's teachers. Mm-hmm. That's primary school teachers, secondary school teachers, subject teachers, basically teachers in the K-12 area. And that's the primary field for most liberal arts majors.
You're saying less than 20% of education majors got offers in the depths of the recession. Where is that now?
It's at 40%, just above 40% for our 2014 survey, which is a massive improvement. I mean, we're almost doubling what it was in the depths of recession. So that's kind of improved the prospects not only for education majors but for liberal arts majors across the board.
Where else do you see growth or a fall off?
Well, interestingly enough, there's been a fall off with computer science and engineering this year. They're still, the top of the list, but they're not as strong as they were even last year or the year before. The weakest major this year is sociology, and it's been a relatively weak major for a couple of years. don't really know exactly why that one in particular, but that's been a relatively weak major.
And what about pay? A lot of students are coming out with a lot of debt. You say pay hasn't changed much, but give us some sense in different fields of what it does look like. For those who have jobs, what kind of averages are you seeing?
Well, again, in terms of national numbers, computer science and engineering majors top the list. If you want the top list, it's petroleum engineers, which are averaging over $90,000 a year in terms of their initial starting salary.
I'm looking at straight up engineer. That's down to like $62,000. Computer science, $61,000. Business, $53,900.
Yeah, and business is kind of across the board. It incorporates things like finance, which is a little bit higher, and marketing, which would be a little bit lower in general. But the weaker majors in terms of pay are the ones that are going into education, those would be things like the liberal arts majors, English, history, political science. And they're in the low 40s, high 30s.
Ah, history, my old friend. And then you get down to at the bottom, you've got social work, 36,000, sociology, 36, visual and performing arts, and criminal justice, 36,200, the lowest I see on here. Why so low there?
I can't tell you exactly why criminal justice is so low there. It's not a major with a large number of students, graduates. So there's some statistical aberration sometimes from one period to the next in terms of the numbers there. So I'm a little wary of that one.
Overall, looking at the numbers that you follow, Edwin Koch, how do you think we're doing matching up our education volume or paths with the job availability?
That's a very difficult question. What we're requiring now is we're requiring the degree. Kind of as Heidi has pointed out, with even jobs that you wouldn't necessarily pinpoint as requiring a college degree, employers are now kind of demanding it. Tom Friedman, in one of his latest books, had an interesting quote from the CEO at DuPont that basically said that even their line operator jobs in manufacturing, they're asking for a college degree because they think they're so technically oriented, they need to be able to communicate with engineers, and they need a higher skill level than a high school degree can provide. And so we're kind of demanding it, and, from a probable standpoint, you're so much better off still pursuing that degree rather than finishing with a high school degree that it's almost essential at this point.
Edwin Koch with the National Association of Colleges and Employers with us from Bethlehem, Pennsylvania. Edwin, thanks very much for giving us a glimpse of what's going on out there.
My pleasure.
Let me bring a couple of our listeners in right here. Christian in Springfield, Massachusetts. Christian, you're on the air. Thanks for calling. What have you found?
Yeah, hi. I'm sorry. I think I'm breaking up on me a little bit, but I just wanted to make a comment on the engineering field. I'm a professor of industrial engineering in Western Massachusetts, a small private university, and all our graduates for the last 5 years have graduated with jobs. And we have trouble keeping them in the classroom the second semester because they're more interested in work than education at that point. But from our perspective, there almost has never been a recession for the industrial engineering.
Industrial engineering, does that mean manufacturing by and large, Christian?
No, it's a very broad field. It's optimization of processes, supply chain management, cost estimating, those sorts of things.
Duly noted. Industrial engineering and never even saw it flagged. Thanks for your call. And Emma in Arlington, Massachusetts. Emma, you're on.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Yes.
I just graduated on Saturday, so I'm walking swiftly forward into the job market, and I'm finding a lot of interesting opportunities, but things that are quite disparate and things that I never really knew I would be interested in before I was looking for a job. So
yeah, it tends to stretch your mind. What's your major, Emma?
I'm a sociology major, so beautiful things to study. However, it does make it a little trickier to find work. So next year I might be working in in a small tequila company in Berkeley. I might be working in a monastery in India. I also could be working on a farm in Massachusetts. So you have to approach the world with a new degree of openness, which is at times a challenge, but is also an incredible gift. So I'm excited to see how things play out, what happens for me and my fellow graduates, and it's going to be a very exciting year.
Emma, we wish you luck with that. We admire your range of consideration there, a tequila factory in California, a monastery in India, a farm nearby. One way or another, we hope it works out well for you, and thanks for your call, Emma. With me in the studio right now is Maria Stein. She's Associate Vice President, Cooperative Education and Career Development at Northeastern University here in Boston. Since 2010, Princeton Review has ranked that career services program at Northeastern number one or two in the country. They've got something good going on. Maria Stein, thanks very much for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
First, just respond to Emma there. Here she is, sociology major looking at India, California, in her own backyard, a tequila factory, a farm, a monastery. I mean, you've got young people, or in her case, and I'm sure many others, who have their minds wide open here to find what it takes.
I love that Emma is optimistic and enthusiastic in looking at her options. I think young people have to look at options. I think a resource that young people today don't take advantage of is their career services on their college campuses. Those are trained folks that can help students really focus in on what they want to be doing for work, how can they leverage their skills, how do their skills and interests align to the world of work, and really help them map out a strategy. A lot of young people and a lot of older people are really passive when it comes to looking for a job. They post a resume on a job board and kind of sit back and wait for employers to find them.
So what does a strategy look like in this market? We heard our economist at the top, you know, the macro view, not at all good. Better than at the bottom of the recession, but still relatively weak. We heard Edwin talk about different fields which may be stronger or weaker. But if you're an individual student and you want to sit down with career services can't change the world, but they can change your strategy individually, I guess.
Correct. So networking is by far the most effective way for any person to find a job. And it's a lot easier today to network than it was 20 years ago. LinkedIn is a wonderful networking tool for everyone to use. There's so much going on in the world around us. There are opportunities. You know, is it as great as it was in 2007? Probably not. But there's a lot of other things happening in the economy that gives me lots of hope and should give young people lots of hope. The boomers are leaving the workforce. Companies need to figure out how they're going to backfill. Mm-hmm. The economy is still moving forward. So there are opportunities, but it's having that strategy. It's knowing that it's not going to be one thing that's going to get me a job. It's a multifaceted approach in having, you know, here's my ideal job and here's my strategy for that. And if that doesn't come through, given what I'm seeing in the world around me, then what's my plan B? And how do I strategize for that? And how do I keep networking? How do I gather more information to inform my search process that I am making some progress?
Do you have to back this strategy up all the way into your major? I mean, we heard about the majors where the pay is better, the jobs may be somewhat more plentiful, but not everyone ends up in those majors. Do you look at them as a career, you know, guide and say, oh, you've blown it already?
No, you know, it's very easy to tell somebody go into accounting or go into computer science because, you know, that right now it's really strong and there are a lot of opportunities. But A, what if you don't have the aptitude? That's really not something of interest to you. So it's really about educating yourself and helping identify skills that you have and skills that you want to acquire and being able to articulate those in relation to a job description and to a potential employer and how you bring value and why it makes sense that you apply to that. If you ask employers and people like or organizations like NACE survey employers, if you look at what they're looking for in young people, it's communication skills, it's critical thinking skills, it's leadership, it's the ability to work in teams. That doesn't happen in any one major, right? That happens across the board through education. The beauty of education is that they give you a broad perspective, they give you theory to understand a field of practice, and some of our institution actually give students an opportunity to take that theory and put it into practice. And so now they're informed. They're building the skills, and they're becoming more attractive and more employable.
And get a toe dip in the job market. Maria Stein is with us from Northeastern University. Let's get our callers, Vijay in Charleston, South Carolina. Vijay, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. I wanted to make a comment about unpaid internships. So I actually graduated last year, and I find that a lot of my friends who can get jobs now, but they're actually selling for unpaid internships. But it's it's my classmates who come from higher income families who can actually afford the living expenses
sure.
to work in cities like New York, to work at the UN, United Nations, for instance, which doesn't pay its interns, that can get that work experience that eventually helps them get actual jobs. But the classmates from lower income families can't afford the living expenses for unpaid internships, so they can't even get experience. And it's just this cycle that perpetuates itself where, you know, friends of mine who have the same majors but who have different incomes can get different experiences with unpaid internships.
Yeah, Vijay, there's been a lot of controversy about that. How's it working out for them? Even if they get the unpaid internship, do you see them then moving into paid positions or kind of treading water there?
A lot of them I see, and like they have been able to use their experience from unpaid internships. So I know people who, you know, because they came from high-income families, for instance, they were able to afford an internship in Geneva, Switzerland at the World Health Organization. Geneva is the fourth or fifth most expensive city in the world.
Yeah.
Using that experience, they were able to get, say, like public health jobs at the Centers for Disease Control. So I've seen this pan out. And then friends, of course, who can't afford living in these expensive cities just keep looking for jobs, but they can only get paid jobs. So it's a cycle that perpetuates itself.
Yeah, Vijay, it's an important sore point. And let us pick it up right here. Maria, what about, first of all, the idea that we're talking about internships, unpaid internships after graduation? Years past, people wouldn't even look at that. They'd come out and probably want to go straight to a job. What about issues of equity here and the effectiveness of getting on that path?
It's a sore topic, and it's been a sore topic now for a number of years, probably since the recession. You know, my conversation with a student is, if you can't afford it, you can't afford it, but at the end of the day, you need to get skills.
Mm-hmm.
So let's identify some paid opportunities that are going to help you get those skills, right? Skills are transferable, and I think young people lose sight of the fact that there's not only one method or one path to building and acquiring skills. There's many different paths.
But how do you get up into those sort of elevated, you know, circles? I mean, they're talking about the World Health Organization in Geneva. You can get skills as a barista and love the barista.
Correct.
But does that land you a job the next year in Geneva?
Probably not, but there are a lot of companies that do have paid internships that will give you those skills that you can market to a World Health. And at the end of the day, I think part of the reality for any person is you need to understand the employment landscape of the industry you're entering. So some of these industries are never going to make the kind of money that a computer science or petroleum engineer is going to make. So that's part of your reality. As a psychology student,
mm-hmm.
I knew when I was starting my career that I wasn't going to be making as much money as my friends that were
petrochemical engineers.
Exactly, or a computer scientist,
yeah.
right? So, but part of that is you have the intrinsic and extrinsic drivers, and at some point every person comes to the realization that it's equally important for me to be happy than to make money, but you need both, right? Because you can't live without.
How do you decide? A graduating senior sits down with you and they've got an unpaid internship here, which sounds kind of cool.
Right.
Or they've got a job here, which doesn't sound so cool, but it pays.
Well, you have that conversation, right? Because you can't make that choice for anyone. You have to help them think about their values. And the other piece of that is their financial situation. If they have a lot of debt, is that the right decision for them to make at this point in time? Can we look at that job description and break down the skills that the student would develop? Can we have a conversation then about how in a year or two you can then leverage those skills in the industry that you want to be in? And then the student needs to decide, right? I mean, if you really, really love that unpaid internship, don't do it full-time. Can you negotiate a part-time doing that and then a part-time barista job? At the end of the day, every one of us has to make that decision because it is our career that we're growing. And careers aren't static, right? They're evolving.
A lot of callers for you, Maria. Luke in Appleton, Wisconsin. Luke, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Tom, thank you for taking my call.
Yes.
I graduated high school in 2007 and went into computer science. And after 2 years of being in the program, I noticed a bunch of my classmates that graduated, they were coming back. And they were saying that the jobs weren't here, that they're either in big cities like New York or over on the West Coast. And everything in the center of the country is outsourced. So what I ended up doing is I dropped out, waiting for the economy to stabilize. I'm currently a truck driver, and right now I'm actually making more than my classmates that did graduate.
Do you think you'll ever go back to computers, Luke, or is this your path now?
It depends on how well, you know, the market works out, because it's becoming more of a global market, and you're competing with, you know, a country like China and India that are, you know, that are really getting into this field. And so I guess it just basically depends on what happens in the future. Right now I'm stuck with this, and to be honest, I mean, it's doing all right.
Doing all right, but there's nothing easy about it. That's a lot of time on the road. Luke, I appreciate your call. Maria, what about some of the STEM fields have not been a sure thing in recent years?
No, but nothing is, right? Mm-hmm. So I think for everyone, you have to think about, you know, you think about yourself, you think about careers, and then there's this thing called reality that sometimes rains on our parade, right?
Mm-hmm.
Are there great jobs for young people today? Yes. Are they necessarily in my backyard? No.
How mobile do you have to be?
I think young people and all of us need to really think about the mobility factor as we look forward in growing our careers, because what I tell my students is today, we are building a global mobile workforce. We need to teach our students how to work not only in our backyard, mm-hmm. but on the West Coast, the South, the North, and in other countries, because regardless of the company you're working for and the role you're in, chances are you'll be interacting with somebody either in another part of the country or somewhere else in the world. And having those skills just makes you more employable. And I think, you know, it's great for all of us to want to stay home. But if you're really passionate about pursuing a particular thing for a career and you want to build a fulfilling career, then sometimes that means there's some things that you have to give up. And that might be living within commuting distance of mom and dad.
Could be a long way off. Could be another country. Noah in Andover, Massachusetts. Noah, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, thanks. Yeah, so I'm actually going to grad school next year, and I'm a physics major. I just graduated from Tufts, and so I've kind of split the world of STEM and, I guess, pure science.
Okay.
So what I'm seeing is a lot of my engineering colleagues get a job, or they see from their internships, you know, other people have hit a glass ceiling, and a lot of them are just opting either to go into a master's program, which is more debt, or get a PhD, hoping that, like, a higher degree will get them an edge in the job market later on. So almost like postponing a job.
So you put it off hoping for a better economy and more qualification. Maria, what about that formula?
I think for some industries and for some students, that works really, really well. There is a lot to be said for really getting your hands and feet into your career and getting an understanding before you go on to a master's program. If you think about most MBA programs, they really want their incoming students to have had that exposure and experience with the world of work, because it does give you a different perspective. It does hone your skills in a different way, so that when you're learning the theory, you're applying it better, because it you can put it in a context. You know, avoiding school, is the master's always the end-all be-all? Is that the solution for every student in every field? No. I don't think so. I think it has to make sense in terms of your greater career aspirations.
I want to look with little particularity, if we can now, in maybe racial terms. 2013, that's the most recent full year of data available, 12.4% of black college graduates between 22 and 27 unemployed. 12.4% for all college graduates, the same age range, unemployment rate 5.6%. That is a huge difference. Janelle Jones is with us right now from Washington, a research associate at the Center for Economic and Policy Research, co-author of a new report, A College Degree is No Guarantee, about the job prospects for black college graduates. Janelle Jones, thanks very much for being with us.
Thanks for having me, Tom.
What did you find in your report? Why the big gap in unemployment between all college grads and black college grads?
Right. So I think Heidi painted a picture earlier about what happens when young college graduates are entering a labor market that's not doing particularly well. And what we're seeing is that black recent college graduates are facing a double discrimination in this respect. They're entering a labor market where young people tend to have a difficult time transitioning into the labor market, and they're also African-American. And we know, you know, there's tons of research on the fact that unemployment for African-Americans is always higher than it is for whites, usually about double. And we're seeing that even, you know, young black workers who have college degrees are even facing this phenomenon.
What do you attribute that to? Is it straight up prejudice, or is it something different in their path into college and out of college, their experience in college and beyond that's at play here, Janelle?
Right. Well, I think there's a lot of issues. One that a caller brought up was kind of this issue with unpaid internships. So, you know, kind of the network that you bring into the labor market has a lot to do with your employment prospects. And a lot of African-American families, you know, they're not going to be able to, you know, recommend you for a job in someone's office because they don't have that experience.
They're not in that another world. It's not mom, dad, or uncle, or friend of the family, or somebody you know through work, not necessarily just in that sphere.
Exactly. So I work at the Center for Economic and Policy Research. My mom works at Ford, and my dad works at the FAA. So, you know, like, they definitely can't recommend me, you know, to come on NPR to talk about my report because they don't follow this work. They're not connected to this world. Another issue, and I think the Urban League just came out with a report, is that, you know, a majority of African-American students are, quote-unquote, non-traditional. So they need to work to support themselves. They might also have families while they're in school. Mm-hmm. So when you have a weak labor market and you can't go to work to help you get through school, you know, you're having an even harder time finishing. And then when you do finish and you're in a job where you don't even need a college degree, you're really feeling, you know, particularly discouraged.
So, Janelle, if I'm a young African-American grad and I come to you, or I'm just entering college as a black student, what's your advice on the best direction to set?
Well, I think, I can't really, you know, give everyone advice, but I think that what we should be focused on is not particularly what each person is going to do in their college career, but really what the economy is going to do for African-American workers who finish a college degree. I think that your personal choices should be your personal choices, but you should have an opportunity in the economy to follow the career that you want. And kind of, you know, where we're at in the labor market, what we're seeing with these high unemployment rates, we're seeing, you know, not enough jobs for sure. That's going to dictate what you do more or less, more than, you know, what you major in, because we see that high unemployment and underemployment is there even for STEM majors.
Let me get a call right here from Bridget in Newport, Rhode Island. Bridget, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Yes.
I just graduated from Fordham University on Saturday, magna cum laude, Phi Beta Kappa, the whole thing.
From Fordham. And, congratulations.
Thank you. And I just accepted a job yesterday in development in a nonprofit organization where I'll be making $23,000 a year. And the issue here is that I have over $100,000 in debt from Fordham. And I know I'm going to be babysitting at night, being a banquet server, you know, doing whatever I can, also living with my parents. And it's very frustrating because I did go to career services, I did the networking, I did everything I could, two internships, but you still find this, you know, immense struggle to find anything that even pays.
Boy, no kidding. What was your major, Bridget? You did so well. What was your major?
Anthropology and communication.
You would think that somehow, I mean, magna cum laude, Phi Beta Kappa, but the first job there, $23,000, and the debt, $100,000. Janelle Jones, a graduate of color or not of color, that's a tough situation.
It is indeed. And I think, you know, the issue of debt, I'm not sure if it's come up, is definitely something that we need to think about. You're taking, you know, you're taking not just the time, but you're taking on a mountain of debt to get a college degree and to not even be, you know, reward in the labor market as you would have been if you were lucky enough to be born 10 years earlier. Like, that's all it would have taken for maybe your prospects to be definitely better. So I think that, you know, that's a tough situation. It's one that's more common than not and that we really need to address.
Bridget, keep driving there. With that kind of performance at a school like that, you've clearly got the capacity. Just keep applying it. Someone's going to recognize that. Keep pushing there. I appreciate your call. Maria, what about that ratio of debt, which has grown and grown, to employment prospects, and then compensation as well, which has been up a little bit, but it's been down and flat for a lot of grads.
Yeah, it's, you know, it is a challenge. Part of our struggle is that young people don't understand what that means when you take out these loans and no one stops to think.
It's almost automatic.
Right? And so nobody stops to think, how am I going to pay this and what kind of a career is going to help me do this? So it's one of those catch-22s because everybody wants to get the best education and everybody wants to make the most of their time in college. And, you know, part of that is thinking about the school, what you're – and it's hard for an 18-year-old, right, to reverse engineer what you want to do
mm-hmm.
4 years down the road and how you build a career. But part of that is – looking at all your options, and if my first job out of college is going to be $23,000 a year, and you know I've done everything and potentially under the sun, and that's what I'm coming up with, and it's something that I can see some potential with. my advice to that person is, okay, think about this for the next 18 to 24 months. Let's think about the skills that you're going to acquire, and let's create a strategy to help you leverage those so that the next position is going to get you the opportunity to move out of mom and dad's house and actually start being that independent person that you wanted to be when you started college.
Dive in, take that step, and get going. Maria Stein at Northeastern University, it's been great to have you here. Thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you for having me.
Janelle Jones, we just have a couple seconds. What's your word of encouragement in spite of all these daunting circumstances, Janelle? Very briefly.
I think in spite of this, everyone should definitely try to go to college if you can, but think about the economy as you do.
Yeah, and it will eventually come to you. Janelle Jones at the Center for Economic and Policy Research. Thank you so much for joining us, Janelle. That report is at our website, onpointradio.org. In a moment, to be graduates, get a little advice from football's Peyton Manning. This is On Point. Football great Peyton Manning graduated from the University of Tennessee, but could often be found in his college years at his wife's alma mater, the University of Virginia. On Sunday, the Broncos quarterback returned to that campus to deliver the UVA valedictory address. Manning offered a little life advice that he picked up on the gridiron. He commended the class, said, "Your generation can put ethics and values back in vogue again." And he went on to recall his own experiences and a few rules of thumb for all rookies, no matter what field they play on.
Football is my profession, my workplace, a field with very clear boundaries, very strict rules, and almost zero margin for error. But the choices in front of each of you are only as restrictive as you allow them to be. Before you walk across that stage tomorrow, close your eyes for just a minute and imagine that you're facing the San Andreas fault line. As you reach out for your diploma, envision standing on one side of a ridge that literally runs north and south for more than 800 miles. Once you leap to the other side, nothing will be quite the same. If you're at all timid and the anticipated leap is a frightening prospect, then your instinct for self-preservation may freeze you in one place. But if you've really listened to and digested the lessons of your professors over the last few years, I promise you that the exhilaration of what's on the other side will far outweigh the risk. What are you leaping towards? If you haven't already accepted an offer, finding a job or career will undoubtedly be your target. And if your parents are on your butt, it better be soon. If you already have a position, then the challenge will be to learn how to stand out and fit in at the same time. Either way, you'll land in a better place if you're honest with yourself. Do a self-check of your aspirations. Challenge your motivations and refuse to wallow. Don't wallow in your lack of thrilling choices, or once you're there and while your new colleagues don't appreciate the remarkable insight you have to offer. You will be a rookie again, a freshman, a first year, if you will. I learned a valuable lesson when I was a freshman at Tennessee that I applied to my first year on the job in the NFL. It was the first time I ran into the huddle as a quarterback at Tennessee. We were playing up at UCLA in the Rose Bowl, 95,000 people in the stands, ABC broadcasting the game on national television, Keith Jackson and Bob Greasy. Tennessee was ranked ninth in the country. UCLA was unranked, expected to be a blowout. I was third team on the depth chart, not expecting to play the entire game, much less the entire season. On the seventh play of the game, our starting quarterback tears his knee. He's out for the year. Our backup quarterback was a guy named Todd Helton, who went on to have an 18-year Major League Baseball career. Let's just say Todd was kind of thinking about that baseball signing bonus he was about to get. He wasn't real crazy about going into the game. So we're getting beat 21-0. My coach turns to me and says, "Peyton, you're going in." And boy, I didn't think I was nervous. I looked down and all the hair on my arms is just sticking straight up. So I'm jogging into that huddle, and I remember something that my dad had told me. He said, "Son, if you ever get into the huddle with the starters at any point in the season, it may be in the fourth quarter of a blowout, it may be just in practice, it doesn't matter. You be the leader and you take control of that huddle. That's your job as the quarterback. You're just 18 years old. Most of these seniors are 21, 22. It doesn't matter. Be the leader and take control of that huddle." So I remembered old dad's advice, and I get into that huddle. And I said, all right, guys, I know I'm just a freshman, but I could take us down the field right now, get us a touchdown, get us back in this game. Let's go. Big left tackle, guy named Jason Lehman, about 6'5", 330 pounds, grabs me by the shoulder and says, hey, freshman, shut the blank up and call the blank and play. And I said, yes, sir. That was really great advice from my dad. I really appreciate that.
Peyton Manning, with his valedictory speech to the University of Virginia's class of 2014. For a video and a transcript of his speech, go to our website, onpointradio.org. Special thanks to the University of Virginia for getting us the audio of that speech. Thanks for being with us. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
On Point is a production of WBUR Boston and NPR.